Blog Talk Radio.
What you want,
You just, you call him up and tell him what you want. Now, if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. You call him up and tell him what you want. For his line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know my Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know my Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. You call him up and tell him what you want. For his line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. No, I know that Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know my Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. You call him up and tell him what you want. Hey, man, good morning. Good morning, Leila Tov. Good afternoon in some places. Good evening in some places, maybe overseas. This is Praise God, Let's Talk About It radio show. My name is Evangelist Michael Peavy from the Golgotha Church of Christ, and we're here every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. just trying to deal with things to help today's youth, talking about church hurt, talking about teachers, talking about scriptures, talking about hope, talking about current community subjects, things that are happening that are apropos. We're just trying to encourage one another, lift one another up, and try to help us to be a little bit closer to where God would have for us to be. We are just excited today because I have two of some of my favorite people on today. My two twin sisters are going to be here with us in just just under a half hour. I see someone, see them on, I think, right now. But I'm just excited to have them with us. We have a combination of over 90-plus years of teaching experience, and they're going to be with us today to share with us some kibbles and bits about how to the different learning aspects and things that they've learned over the years. And I tell you, if somebody, I love to sit at the feet of people that's been doing things for years because they can teach you something. They can teach you something that can help you to hone your craft, get a little better, and then maybe help you to understand some of the things that's going on in today's society. We've got to save our youth. Our youth are not only our future, they are our today. And if they're gone today, they won't be here tomorrow. Amen, somebody. So we thank God for just the opportunity to just be able to use this vehicle, this format on Blog Talk Radio. Right now we're broadcasting throughout the continental United States as well, in every state of the United States, as well as Germany, and we're looking to expand even more from there. But before we get into that, always like to bring a little something in the morning to get our minds moving, keep us focused on keeping the main thing the main thing. Let's talk about from Dope. Have you ever felt doomed? Yeah, doomed. You ever felt like you were trapped in a fog of irreversible decline? Maybe you felt terrified to go anywhere on your own. That's a terrible feeling, isn't it? Have you ever felt defenseless and even afraid so much so that you just stopped going anywhere? Because everywhere seemed to be a problem, at least in your mind. Well, I want you to understand that this drug of fear, this dope, so to speak, many in the world have digested this drug. Many have taken the dope of alienation, the dope of forsakenness, the dope of uninspiredness, the dope of being powerlessness, the dope of oppression, the dope of limitness, the dope of doom, the dope of helplessness, and even the dope of captivity. Yeah. You can't find this at a local drugstore. You won't get this prescribed over. This is something that happens because of trauma or happens because of fear. Think about it. The drug of alienation, the dope of alienation. Alienated individuals believe that they are somehow different from other people. They feel as if they have been cut loose, no longer deemed worthy of love, no longer deemed worthy of care nor support. In turn, they tend to close themselves off, fearing further pain and scared that they'll get more rejection. That's the dope of alienation. Say you're on the drug of forsakenness. Remember that word forsaken refers to an experience of total abandonment that leaves you feeling alone in the time of your greatest need. That's why Jesus hanging there on Golgotha Hill, that tree, said, Eli, Eli, sabachthani, my God, why have thou forsaken me? I feel alone. I feel empty. I feel left. Matter of fact, you may even recall Job. Over there in the Old Testament, Job was crumpled over. Not only was he crumpled over, he was covered with sores to the point of pleading with the seemingly indifferent God. He had taken the drug of forsakenness, not understanding the test that was in front of him. But there was an integrity about Job, come what may. Naked I came and naked I go, but blessed is going to be the name of the Lord at all times. When you feel like there's no more rope, you still got to hold on. Many have taken the drug of being uninspired. Tough one, right? Because feeling uninspired can be especially difficult for underprivileged minorities. They can be extremely difficult for the black and brown community. Feeling uninspired can be extremely difficult for whom opportunities for growth seem to be swaying and positive role models within the group may be either lacking or undervalued. Many have taken on the drug of powerlessness. You ever felt powerless? You ever felt alienated? You ever felt forsaken? I'm certain there's times you felt uninspired. But if you felt powerless, people of every age need to believe that if they just took the time to write the story of their life, they probably can write a bestseller. When we need that is thwarted, when one feels incapable, this is powerlessness now, when one feels incapable of navigating their own way towards desired goals, when you feel like you cannot reach your goal, you don't know how to get to your goal, you cannot see your way through the fog, feel like you are handcuffed or shackled or there's a glass ceiling. That is a feeling of powerlessness. And that ugly feeling can set in. Many feel they've taken on the drug of oppression. Oppressed people many times they find their power in their oppression. But sometimes oppression involves the subjugation of a person or a group. The Latin word that means press down. Or you may have seen synonyms like downtrodden. What it does, it suggests a sense of someone that's being flattened, someone that's being pushed down, someone that's being crushed up under them. Oppression can really get you down. How about feeling limitless? You ever taken the drug of feeling like you're limited? When the struggle for survival is combined with a sense of failed mastery, failed skill, you just can't get over the hump, then we start to feel limited. We look at ourselves as deficient, don't we? Lacking to have the right stuff to make it in this world. I want you to know everybody has a deficiency. Everybody needs a little help sometimes. But folks, when we get in our head and not really analyze what's going on around us and recognize how blessed we truly are, then we take this dope. And the spiritual dope won't give you a spiritual high. When you feel alienated and forsaken, uninspired and powerless, when you feel oppressed and even limited, that's a sense of failed mastery. That's a sense when you start to look at yourselves as deficient. Do I have what it takes? You start questioning yourself. You look at the man in the mirror, but not to encourage the man in the mirror, but to tear down the man in the mirror. This form of hopelessness. Yeah. See, limitlessness is a form of hopelessness. And this form of hopelessness is all too common among the poor, as well as those that are struggling with severe physical handicaps or crippling learning disabilities. That's why we have to help our youth to overcome some of these things. Think about it. If you've taken the drug of doom, those that are weighted down by this form of despair, everything is doomed. Everything is just a bah humbug. There is no silver lining. There is no, the sun is not going to shine. There'll never be mourning after weeping. Bible says weeping will do for a night, but joy comes in the morning. You'll never experience that joy because you're always thinking you live in this state of doom, a form of despair. You presume that your life is over, that death is now imminent. The sad state for many of our seniors who still have much to teach us, much vitality, much information, much joy, and much experience that we must glean from. But many times, because they have not been given the esteem or put on the pedestal that they deserve of respect. I didn't say a false perch. I'm talking about a level of respect. Then they start to feel uninspired. They start to feel doomed. The ones most vulnerable to sinking into this particular circle of hell. Yeah. Those that are seriously diagnosed with this life-threatening illness of doom. There are also those who see themselves worn out by age or worn out by infirmity. There's just no way out. As long as you look down, you'll never be able to look up. Maybe you've taken the doom, maybe you've taken the drug of captivity. And there's two forms can result from captivity. The first consists of physical captivity, which encompasses emotional captivity, and it's enforced by an individual or a group that makes you feel like a prisoner in your own skin. Prisoners fall into this category as well as those held captive in a controlling or abusive relationship. Hello, somebody. You're in an abusive situation. You are physically and emotionally a captive. You're a prisoner for the wrong reason. The other form of hopelessness, this other imprisonment, is an equally insidious form of entrapment, but it's self-imprisonment. So you can be imprisoned by other people, or you can be imprisoned by yourself. This occurs when we cannot leave a bad relationship because there's a sense of self that won't allow you to let it go. Many are suffering with that to this very day. Might there be somebody in my listening audience today that needs to let go and let God? God will get you out if you allow him in. So we can be imprisoned or captive by other people. Or we can be imprisoned or captive in our own self. There's many times that you've asked the Lord to forgive you. And God has thrown it into the sea of forgetfulness, never to be remembered again. But you have not forgiven yourself. You're still imprisoned. You're still incarcerated in your own mind. And our motto here at the Golgotha Church of Christ is that we're fighting an incarcerated mind with the incarnated Christ. You do know that everyone that is incarcerated is not necessarily behind iron bars. And then we have a drug of hope, of helplessness. Yeah, helplessness. So maybe you've taken the drug of alienation, the drug of forsakenness. You you've dipped in the dope of uninspiredness and the dope of powerlessness. You've shot up oppression, and you've sniffed up limitlessness. You've drank up doom, and now you're caught up in the midst of captivity. But then there's another one called helplessness. And helpless individuals no longer believe that they can live safely in this world. Let me say that again. Helpless individuals no longer believe that they have the faculty or the capacity nor the ability to live safely in the world. They feel exposed. They feel vulnerable. Like a cat after being declawed or a bird grounded by a broken wing. Cats' fighting mechanism is their paws and their claws. When you declaw them, you take away their ability to defend themselves. And you take away their ability to catch prey, especially if they're alley cat. Take away the claws of an alley cat. That cat dead. Because he can't fight. All you can do is pet. Or a bird that's supposed to fly, but can't get off the ground because the wing is broken. That's helpless. That's vulnerable. That's exposed. I want you to understand, folks, that trauma is helplessness. Trauma, or the repeated exposure to uncontrolled stress and stressors, can produce an ingrained sense of helplessness. In the words of one trauma survivor themselves, it says, "I was terrified to go anywhere on my own. I felt so defenseless and afraid that I just stopped doing anything." Lord have mercy. This individual needs help. Needs help from on high. And if you find yourself in this state or this order of dope, I want to encourage you to move from the position of dope to hope. And that transfer, that bridge between the stimulus and the action, that choice that you must make, must be bridged by Jesus. Mark 5, 25 through 34, we find a state of a certain woman that's in despair. A certain woman that has been suffering with an issue of blood for 12 years. This is not just a little bit of blood. This is in the Greek word erusis, which is a flowing hemorrhage. She's hemorrhaging. She's losing much blood. Means she's losing a lot of strength and capacity to do almost anything. She's tired. She has seen many specialist physicians that dealt with many different types of blood diseases. Didn't help her. She had spent all of her money and all of her worth that she had with no change in the results. State of despair. And on top of that, her condition is getting worse. She don't get it fixed. She will die in this situation. She's in a state of hopelessness. She's in a state of despair. We see this woman that's hurting.
But this woman also had a positive side to her. She had some integrity. Don't let despair drain you of your integrity. Hope came and was restored when she heard that Jesus was near. Oh, can you see the excitement in this woman? The Messiah is near. My situation can be helped if I just get to the Messiah. That's the action. That's where she needed to press her energy into. And sometimes we don't make it to our destination or we don't reach our goals because we don't apply all of our strength or energy accordingly. Here's a woman that was drained. But if she had one more thing she must do, she got to get to Jesus. Look at her wording. She even said, if I may touch his clothes, I'll be made whole. You have so much faith in the garment of Jesus. I don't want to touch him. I don't even want him to know that I'm near. But if I can just touch the hem of his clothes, not tug on it, just touch it. The power in the touch will change my life. Ooh, I hope I'm talking to somebody today. Because there's some people today that's feeling like you can't make it any further, that it's almost over, that you're ready to wave the white flag, but you just need to get to Jesus. If I just touch his clothes, if I can touch the hem of his garment, I will be made whole. I will be cured. Her problem, although physical, was not the real issue. Hopelessness is a spiritual problem. So you don't become defined by your condition. You allow your condition to push you to get closer to God. She reaches out. She touches the hem of his garment. And he knows. He knows something's happened. He recognizes that something has taken place. And he wants to know who touched him. There's a state of despair. There's a state of integrity. But Jesus is intelligent. And he has intelligent comprehension. Folks, God connects. And God recognizes real faith. Thy faith has made you whole, and your faith will lead you in peace. Jesus says, who touched my clothes? Not my foot, not my arm. Who touched my clothes? He could tell that faith needed him. And he was willing and ready to charge up. The woman has experiential comprehensions now. She learned to know by experience. That's where we're at. We learn to know by experience of being with God. Jesus has intelligent comprehension because emotionally, intelligence starts with self-awareness. And Jesus is self-aware. He draws his understanding of who he is and what he was on earth to accomplish from his intimate relationship with God. John 1:4-10. He was unashamed of who he was and who he was created to be. Jesus was intelligent with self-awareness. Not only was he intelligent, but his emotional intelligence depends on self-motivation, because Jesus was also a self-starter. At the age when he would begin his apprenticeship in his father's craftsman shop, he was feeling a desire to go a different way. Even at the age of 12, he wanted to take charge of his life, Luke 2:49. But it wasn't time. Yet Jesus still felt ready to start. He was self-motivated. How's your motivation to do God's work today? No one forced Jesus to go to the cross. He could have easily escaped from Jerusalem. This was certainly on his mind when he prayed to God in the Garden of Gethsemane. But he says, no one takes it from me. No one takes my life. But I lay it down on my own accord. John 10:18. And then intelligent focuses on managing your emotions. Any person capable of angering you, that person that makes you angry, that person becomes your master. Jesus was a master at managing his emotions. He wasn't going to let nobody get him off his square. He experienced every emotion that you and I would ever experience, Hebrews 4:10, but was able to manage those emotions in a positive direction, avoiding a sinful abuse of those emotions. I could go on and on and on. And at one point in time, I will help you with this lesson even more, but I just want us to understand that as we look at these elements from a grown-up's point of view, we look at these situations of being alienated, forsaken, uninspired, powerless, oppressed, limited, doomed, capacity, and helplessness. If adults have a problem with this, we know that our youth do too. If we are the example, they would they be. And that's why this show is designed on helping today's youth, and we're so honored today. I'm so honored today to have my sisters with me. And they are going to be Lois Owsley Edwards and Phyllis Owsley Voss, 90 plus years of experience of teaching from different capacities and different levels. So I'm going to go to them at this point in time. I want to say good morning to you, Phyllis and Lois. Y'all there?
Good morning, Mike. Good morning. We're here.
Good morning. Good morning. How you guys doing today?
I'm just fine. Great.
What's the weather like there in the DMI?
Well, it's raining today, but it's going to be in the 70s later on this afternoon. It's about 70 now, but it's still raining.
Oh, okay. So it's a little rainy, huh? We got some little rain yesterday, but I think we may get more later. But right now, seem to be doing all right. I'm glad to have you guys with us this morning, and we're going to be talking about Lois and Phil. Well, I'm going to have them introduce themselves. Lois or Phyllis, whichever one y'all want to start off, introduce yourselves and give us a little background on you, if you would.
Okay, I'll start. I'm Phyllis Owsley Voss, and I live here in Des Moines, Iowa. Have taught in the public schools for over 35 years, and now I'm currently working at Joshua Christian Academy. Yay, go Joshua.
Yay, Joshua.
And I've been there for 8 years, and I love it. To start out with a little about myself, I started my college career at Waldorf Junior College in Forest City, Iowa. That's way up north. I wanted the experience of being away from home, so that's why I went to Waldorf. And actually, I was recruited there when in my senior year at Tech High School. I went to Waldorf, studied there for 2 years. It was a junior college at that time. Now it's a university. And I was the first African-American female to graduate from Waldorf, and this was in the 70s. And after my 2 years at Waldorf, I transferred back home to Drake University. And at Drake, I had the opportunity to be a part of the Teacher Corps program. And it really enhanced my teaching skills and really got me ready for teaching. I graduated from Drake with a bachelor's degree in education. And at that particular time, when I graduated, after I graduated, Des Moines Public Schools had a hiring freeze, and that meant I wasn't able to teach. So I accepted a position. Yeah, that was really bad. I accepted a position as a teacher's associate working through Orchard Place. And Orchard Place is a special program here in the Des Moines Metro which helps students who have specialized needs. Anyway, during my year as working as a teacher's associate, I went back to school to Drake. And I earned a specialist endorsement in special education, which allowed me to not only work with regular elementary students, but it allowed me to work with students who had behavior disorders, the kinds of students that I had been a teacher's associate over through Orchard Place. I also would be able to work with the learning disabled student and the student with mental disabilities. Now, all of those titles have changed now. They're not known as that. But anyway, with that endorsement, I was finally hired as a special education teacher at Howe Elementary School teaching behavior disabilities students. So I loved it. It was my passion. And next, I took an assignment of setting up a behavior disorders program at Phillips Elementary School. And at Phillips, it was really kind of, it was a big task for me to be able to do that, but I loved it since I loved working with those students. Anyway, when you're in special education, especially with working with behavior disorder students, it's very challenging and your programs are moved to other schools because they take a lot of time from the principals. So consequently, the program after being at Phillips for 2 years was transferred to Stowe Elementary. So I worked at Stowe Elementary working with the BD students and really enjoying it. And then I went back to Howe School working as kindergarten teacher. Anyway, I did that for a while, and yes, I've taught kindergarten. That's hard. It actually wasn't Howe where Stowe where I taught kindergarten there. And then I transferred to McKee Elementary School where I taught the learning disabled resource students. Those are students that just came into the center that needed help with with reading or math, language or something like that, and then they would go back to their rooms. So at that particular time in my life, I felt like I needed a change. So
yeah,
an opportunity presented itself for me to teach in the San Antonio, Texas public schools. And so I moved my family, as you know, to San Antonio, Texas.
I was in
San Antonio, yep, and a huge city compared to what I was used to. And when I was down there, I remember I kept telling myself, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to learn how to go to work. And coming back home, I'm not doing anything. But I did learn my way around the city eventually. I was there only for 1 year. So when I came back to Des Moines, I went to school, teach at Wallace Elementary School. And I was working in special education then, too. And finally, I decided, well, let me see if I can try my hand at doing something different. So I transferred to King Elementary School, where I taught second grade 1 year, and then first grade 6 years after. I worked with second graders, then first graders. And I really, really loved working with the regular education students. That gave me, I could see the difference between working with regular ed and the special ed needs students. But my assignments didn't end there. Next, I took an assignment, which was really challenging, was working with the ELL students, and that's the English Language Learning students. Those were students who were learning English. And we worked with students from that had different needs. I enjoyed doing that. I did that for 5 years, working with the ELL students, and those students just really love all that you could do them. They really, really love that. So I thought, well, after doing the ELL, working with that group, I decided to retire. So my career had led me in 2013 to retire from the Des Moines Public Schools, but I thought my career as a teacher was complete after I had retired, but I was wrong. Next, in 2015, I interviewed for the special education position at Joshua Christian Academy, JCA as we call it, and where I'm currently working. And I really enjoyed working at JCA. I really, really do. It's been a blessing for me to be there. It seems like it's my mission, and that's how I look at it every day. I don't have any hard luck or anything. I think positive when I go into the school. I pray as I go into the school, and I know it's going to be a good day. I know it's going to be a happy day. And most of my days there have been good, pleasant, happy days. But I also wanted to share that I've also worked at the Des Moines Area Community College at a particular time in my life where I was an adult basic education teacher and a testing examiner in the testing center giving the GED test and college makeup test. So that kind of rounded off what I had been doing. But I also, and we have this hanging on the wall at JCA, and this is a model that I kind of go by, and the model is, students are unresponsive. Maybe you can't teach them yet, but you can love them today. Maybe you can teach them tomorrow. And that's a quote by Jeffrey Holland. And I really go by that model when I work with my students. Now I'm going to let Lois introduce herself.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lois Owsley Edwards. Good morning, Mike. Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay. And a model that I would like to start off with before sharing a little bit about myself is find a job you like and you'll never have to work a day in your life. That's what I think about these 40-plus years of education. Working in education, I started in 1973. I went to Grandview College. It was a junior college then, right after high school. And after getting in the area that I wanted to get into and getting those preliminary things out of the way, I transferred to Graceland College in Lamoni, Iowa, now a university. Mm-hmm. I received a Bachelor of Arts degree from Graceland in 1973, I believe it was, and I came back to Des Moines, my hometown, yay, and I got a job with the Des Moines Public Schools, and
all right.
I taught Title I reading. I taught Title I reading for about 6 years. And as I taught reading, I taught that at several different schools. My very first school was Moulton Elementary. I loved going to school every day. I just loved it. And I could not actually believe that they were paying me to do this. I mean, I went there every day, and I thought, am I getting paid for doing this?
Yes.
So I enjoyed doing that job. After a year and a half as a reading specialist, I transferred to Dunlap Elementary School. You know a little bit about that, Mike.
Oh, yes, I know about that one. That was my grammar school.
That was your grammar school, and it was my grammar school, Dunlap Elementary. And I stayed there for about 4 years, and then I transferred to Longfellow Elementary School to work in a graded situation. I taught second grade for about 8 years there at Longfellow. Just dearly loved it, dearly, dearly loved it. And as I said before, I couldn't believe they're paying me to do this. And so I did that for a little while, and while I was at Longfellow, I went back to Drake University, and I started working on a master's degree in school counseling, and I did that for a while, and then when a substitute counseling position came available, I was hired as a substitute counselor, and I knew that I could do this job for 3 months, and then the counselor was coming back, and I knew that I would be comfortably back in my second grade classroom at Longfellow. But I remember as I was sitting at a meeting one day, and I was sitting next to the director of counseling, and she and I was talking, and I just said to her, oh, well, I guess I'll be back in my classroom, and I gave a date, and she said, don't be so sure about that. And I wasn't really sure what she meant, but about a week later, she was calling me and asking me to be the counselor at Callanan Middle School, and I was just shocked. Yeah, I went on to Callanan, and now keep in mind, Callanan is middle school. I've been used to elementary school. And I remember the very first day that I walked into Callanan, I looked around and saw all these teenagers with all these hormones going wild. And I said, what have I got myself into? But, you know, as I worked there at Callanan that year, I come to know a lot of the students. I come to know what they were about, and I did like working there at Callanan. And I remember one quote that some of the kids had said to me, we really like having you here. And these are 7th and 8th graders. And that did it all for me. I knew I liked working at Callanan. And I always tried to help the students, because I think when you're in a position like teaching, counseling, our job is to help students. It's not to put them down or whatever. And I remember one comment that the counselor next door to me said to a student, because she had come in wanting to use the phone, and back then we didn't have cell phones. And the counselor said, well, have you used your one phone call a year? And she said yes, and she wouldn't let the child use the phone. So the child came to me and asked me to use the phone. And I thought, of course, how can anybody stop someone from using the phone? So I let her use the phone, and she became a good friend of mine. But I did that for a while. But keeping in mind, my background was in elementary education. And so when opportunity came for me to do some elementary work again, I did transfer back to elementary, although I had 3 schools that I was responsible for, and I went to those 3 schools religiously. I love doing that as a counselor. That's what I did. And I ended up at Edmonds Academy of Fine Arts, and I stayed there for about 18 years thinking, oh, this will be the school that I'm going to probably retire from. but the school district had other plans for people around the district. So I ended up having to do some traveling again, and I split my time between Edmonds and a school on the south side called Morris Elementary, and I worked those two schools for a year. And then the next year, a position came available at Finley Elementary as counselor, and I worked at Finley for 7 years, but I didn't have to travel. And I really like that because you get to know the kids, you get to know the teachers and everything. So I really enjoyed working there at Finley. And then after Finley, I ended up doing one more year in counseling at a school called Cattell Elementary, and I retired the same year my sister did in 2013 as a counselor from Cattell Elementary. And as Phyllis said, I thought that would be my last job of teaching, but it ended up not being the last job of teaching. But I do want to go back and say I did earn the master's degree from Drake University in 1979. And then some of the educational experiences that I had during this time was I was counselor at the Drake Women's Center, where I helped misplaced homemakers find jobs and get back into school. And I loved doing that. And I also worked as a human relations facilitator, where we traveled around, the facilitators traveled around AEA area teaching human relations skills. And I did that for about 10 summers. That was a summer job. And then while I was there, I had the opportunity to write two programs or classes for Heartland AEA curriculum for Heartland AEA, and I wrote a course called Working with the Hard to Handle Child in the Classroom, and then I also wrote another class called Working with the ADHD Child in the Classroom, and these courses I taught during the summer to teachers, trying to help them to learn how to work with these kids, because ADD kids can be challenging as they're in the classroom. So I did all of that, and like I said, in between that time, about 1979, I received a master's degree in counseling, school counseling from Drake University. So that's what I did. And then after retiring from the Des Moines Public Schools, I like listening to my sister talk about JCA. And before I started JCA, I did some subbing work for the Des Moines Public Schools and really enjoyed doing that. But after listening to her talk about JCA and the wonderful school it was, I knew that I had to be a part of JCA. So when the position came available, high school and middle school history. And I'm thinking, those are high school kids. Those are middle school kids. I'm used to elementary. But
another level, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I knew if I wanted to be a part of this wonderful program that JCA has, that I would have to jump on board there. And I jumped on board as the high school and middle school teacher and social studies teacher, and that's the position that I have now. I teach middle and high school social studies to these kids, and I believe that if you have yourself prepared well, you can teach anything and anybody, and that's what I try to do, because like Phyllis, when I go into a school, and that was even in elementary and what I'm doing now, before I go to the building, I always say a prayer. And the prayer mainly is, Lord, help me to be able to help these students today. Help me to be able to help somebody today. And that's my one of my models that I do. I try to help people as I go about my day and teaching kids and so on. So that's me kind of in a nutshell. Just know that I do love education, and I'm just so happy. I want to leave with one more quote before I go on. I remember years ago, my mother used to always say, learn to get a job that you can work with your head and not your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd be more happy if you can think about your thing. Yeah, get something that you can do with your head, not your hand. And I've done that, and I dearly love education. I can't think of any other field that I'd be as happy in.
She also said something like, once you get an education, it's something that nobody can take away from you.
Take away. Yes, yes, yes.
And that is what I have gone with all these years and thought about. She was right about that. Once you get your education, it's something that nobody can take away from you, and you will always work. You'll always have an opportunity to work. And when I think of that, you know, when I think of starting working in my 20s, and now in my advanced years here, I'm still working. I still have a job.
Yes.
I still have a job and still love 25, it.
25, right? 25?
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm glad you said advanced years.
But yeah, that you're saying still have a job and still a vital job that you're still helping people.
Yep. We're still able to help people. And I feel like it's a wonderful opportunity, and I feel like this is my mission. This is what God called me to do, to work with students. And I did it in the public schools. Now I'm doing it in the private Christian schools, and still loving it. Because I remember feeling after I'd retired. And I only stayed retired about 3 years before I started in again. But I remember thinking, what am I going to do with myself all day? I'm used to getting up at 6 in the morning and getting ready to go to work. And what am I going to do with myself? And I just couldn't sit and watch the soap operas. So finally took a position with 2 days a week after school with Sylvan Learning Center. And at Sylvan, I was working teaching reading after school to kids who needed help. And so I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm at it again. But it was really, really hard for me just to sit home and do nothing. And I thought, well, this isn't me. I have to be doing something. And I started to form a group and work with the neighborhood kids. But I didn't do that, but 'cause the job with Sylvan came around, but yeah, it was just really, really hard for me just to sit and do nothing. I knew I was retired and deserved to sit and do nothing, but that's not me. I'm constantly doing things, and when my grandkids would come over, I was having school with them. And
yeah.
And they were, so, you know, it was just really, really hard to just sit and do nothing. So, yeah.
Well, you guys got an array of, man, some of the stuff I remember, some of it I don't. Over the years, I'm like, it's been so much. Well, that's why I love this opportunity, because I get a chance to interview them, because I'm like, this is amazing. I'm sitting there looking at the collectiveness of Phyllis. You're in special ed, you had BD, behavior disorder, learning disorder, mental disorder. And then you went to kindergarten, first and second grade. Dealt with ELL, English Language Learning, Sylvan Learning Center, DMAC, doing GE tests and college makeup tests. Then you retired in 2013. You went to San Antonio and then came back and retired in 2013 from Des Moines Public School System. Another 2 years or so later, 3 years later, you went to, took a position at Joshua Christian Academy, and you're still working there. I hear Lawson, Title I reading, second grade counseling, middle school, social studies in high school. Laura, I don't think you talked about your DMAC experience, but you were there for many years.
Yeah, I should have said that. I was at DMAC for 35 years. I was in
35 years.
DMAC,
I remember that.
It
was all day and then all night. Yeah, Monday night. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
and then,
I forgot to say that.
Now, this is my question to you guys. And then you both retired in 2013. Now, so here's the question.
Yeah.
Number one, what's it like to be twins, identical twins? And what's it like to be identical twins with the same profession? And then you end up retiring in the same year. I mean, that's amazing to me. I'm looking at this parallel.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
Now, you know, Mama raised us to be close, you know, so
yes.
When I got a bicycle, she got a bicycle.
Yeah, the bicycles all looked alike, but
when I got new clothes, she got new clothes,
yeah.
You know, and they looked alike because she dressed us alike until we were in third grade because the teachers couldn't tell us apart, so they separated us in third grade. So we've always been close. And I think that makes the difference. And as children, we used to play school. I would teach her one day, then the next day she would be the teacher, and I'd be the student.
Wow!
So we always liked teaching and being about that. And so it was really, really easy for us to know that that's what we wanted to do was to be teachers. And so that's why we prepared so hard to be teachers. And when you have a twin sister, and I don't know what it's like if it would be a twin boy and a twin girl, but with twin sisters, you always have a friend. You always have a best friend. You don't have
That's
to worry
right.
about going places by yourself because you always got your sister. And so I know when it came down to starting to retire, I said to her, well, you know, I think I'm going to retire next year. And she said, I think I'm going to work on a little more. And I said, well, why don't you just think about it? Then we thought we would open up a business together if she retired at the same time I did. We could do...
I remember that. Basically, I remember y'all talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we thought we would do that. So... we both decided just to go ahead and retire at the same time. And I know I was ready, you know, simply just because my body was telling me that you need to slow up a little bit, but, you know, but you take medicine and keep going. So I would say that what it's like being a twin is that you always have a friend. You always have somebody that you can relate to. Like, I call her all the time. She calls me all the time.
I see her every day. I see her every day either. So, and then not only seeing her every day, I call her up before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
We talk every day.
Every day.
Two or three times a day.
Two or three times
and
a day.
When we first got at Joshua Academy or when I first got there, my room was upstairs, her room was downstairs, but I always had somebody to have lunch with. So, and now it's really different because the high school, middle school program has moved to the south side. So I don't get to have lunch with her every day. I don't get to have lunch with her, but I do call her every evening when I get out of school or whenever I can. So, yeah, we see each other a lot. And as she said, you always have somebody to do something with. And I like that. You know, I don't have to go places by myself. We never have had to go places by ourselves because you always got your friend with you. And so it's just been wonderful. We used to even just travel together, too. You know, we've been to
almost
every
state. I know y'all was just recently up here for the Peabo Bryson concert. That was a good concert too. We enjoyed that tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we're thinking about doing, Mike, and I think she told you about that, we're planning to do the Sights and Sounds at Branson, Missouri. Did she tell you about that?
Yeah, when I talked to her last week, this past week, I think she mentioned that, huh?
Yeah, so it's the story of Queen Esther, for those that don't know it. But anyway, we're looking forward to doing that probably within the next 2 weeks. So, yeah, so we do travel together. And
So here's my question. Do you guys dress alike when you teach? are you still tricking people? I mean they got to be the case, you know. let's change schools today and see if anybody would notice.
There, you know what? There are people that still can't tell us apart, and I really think there are people at the schools. Even when I worked at the main building at Joshua, there were people that could not tell us.
Well,
apart.
You sat at my desk last week. And yeah. Somebody thought you were me.
Yeah, I was sitting at her desk in her room because we're teaching summer school now, and one of the teachers came in and was saying something that she should have been saying to Phyllis, and I looked up at her thinking she'd look at my face and realize that I wasn't. It took her a while before she realized that I wasn't Phyllis. Well, yeah, some people still can't tell us apart. And even at church, there's people that don't know us apart, that really don't. So
they just call us twins.
Yeah.
That used to amaze me because, you know, people would always say, well, how do you tell them apart? I know the difference between them. How come you can't see it? Well, yeah. But now as we've gotten older in our advanced years, you know, both are looking just like mama. You know, and I see the blend once again, you know, and
yeah.
So it's just amazing. One thing definitely want you guys to talk about, and then I'm going to open up the lines. We've got a lot of folks on here today. I want to open up the lines and ask, you know, for any questions they may have or whatever. Lesson plans. I do want to mention, Laura's talking about being my Title I teacher. She's my Title I teacher down at Dunlap, and see, I had told all the kids, listen, my sister's coming to teach us in fourth grade. We had Mr. Caldwell. He looked like Lamont Sampson from and carried a ruler in his hand. And I said, well, she's coming to teach. I said, we ain't going to have to do no homework because my sister's coming in. And all the guys, man, I was the king of the cast. Until Lois come up in there, I think I did more homework than all of them. They was like, man, you said your sister wasn't going to. I said, yeah, I thought so, but that wasn't the case. And so, so she, you know, as a child, she blew all my little credibility back then. And so, you know, I never lost confidence. So, but I was that was back when I was singing Duff the Dunlap Dragon. And,
I remember that song.
I had a real high voice. I could sing higher than all the girls, and they gave me the song back then. So wonderful. I want you guys to talk about lesson plans. I'm real curious about how you go about putting together lesson plans, and is it different for the different levels? Like for, you know, you talked about kindergarten and grade school, you know, first and second grade. But then you got middle school, you got college, you got folks, you're talking about GED, high school level, and college prep. I mean, how do you prepare your lessons for those, and is it different?
Well, it is different a little bit with different grade levels and so forth. I find that when planning for middle and high school students, which that's the area that I'm teaching in now, that I find that it is important to think about what it is that I want the students to learn. You know, I generally, before I start doing anything, I will read, like if it's a chapter, I'll read a chapter, and then I'll come back and think of, now what is it that's the most important thing about what these students need to learn as they read the chapters. So that's really important. And I do that clear across the board. What is it that I want the seventh graders to know? What is it that I want the eighth graders to know? And so on for all of the classes. I really think that objectives are some of the most important parts of a lesson plan. And then as I work through the lesson plan, I really do. Student is going to get out of chapter one. And then after I do that, then I put together some things on what it is I want them to learn or to do in the chapter. What kind of activities that's going to help them to learn. So I do that. And then lastly, I think about assessing them. How are we going to assess that they've learned what I want them to learn? This year, I've come about, and not only this year, I've done it in years past too, giving the kids little projects to go along with the lesson. You know, what kind of things can I put in there that can either get together as a group and start planning what they want to do, and as long as it's pertaining to the lesson. I think that's important that they do some activities along with that chapter. Plan something that they're going to do and then present it, not only for me, but for other students in the classroom so that they'll know. A lot of times I'll break up the chapter and give the kids certain part of the chapter that they have to do some intense studying on and then presenting it to the kids. Now, this past year, this was the first time we did, doing Black History Month. I had the kids do, let them choose a person in Black History that they would like to learn a little bit more about and then present it to the class. But not only did they present it to the class, they were responsible for presenting it to the total student body. We did a kind of like a little assembly one day, and the kids knew that whoever they chose, they needed to share some things with total school. And we'd never done that before, and some liked it and some didn't like it. But anyway, that's what we did. We did the little project there. And this past year, too, I had the kids look at and thinking of another way to work this. We did I gave them several ideas as to what they could do, and some put together little not postcards, but like little sports cards on the person. They put a picture of the person on the front, and then on the back they write information about that person and either share it with the kids, the class. Little things like that. I try to pick little things that they could do to enhance their learning. So,
okay.
And keep them interested in what they're doing. And basically, I believe that objectives are the most important part of a lesson plan. What it is you hope them to get out of it. Activities and things that you plan within the lesson plan so you won't make it so boring for them. And then how are you going to assess them? Are you going to assess them with tests? Writing of something, essay about what the chapter is about, or something of that nature. So those three things are really, really important as you plan to work with kids.
Another thing that would go into lesson plans would be, and I've done this with special ed students, and I've done it when I work with regular ed, is I write out the objective of what I want them to get out of the lesson, but then I also do what is known as a KWL chart, where I write the big K, and that stands for, that's for what the student knows, and then the W is what you want them to know, and then the L is what at the end what they learned. So we work on this chart as we are working through a lesson. We work through this chart. Well, what if we're doing something on spiders or something like that? Well, what do we know about spiders? And that's what I first write under the L, under the K, what they know. They all raise their hands and tell me. And this is just for an example, spiders. It could be anything. And we write what they know. and then we write what I want them to know. You know, I write things like what I want them. Well, spiders are blah blah blah. And then at the very end of our study on spiders or whatever, we write what we've learned. And that's a good way of assessing kids is what did you learn after we took a week of studying about spiders? So that is one good way to assess them. But another thing that I want to talk about is when I'm working with students, I have to keep in mind that not all students learn the same. And this goes down to learning styles. Some students are visual learners, and that means they learn by observing things, and they may use graphic organizers. And then some students are verbal learners, where they memorize the materials. And then you have your physical learners who learn by playing and movement, and your logic learners who succeed by using organizing steps, making connections, or your social interactive learners who learn best through communication, whether it be verbal or nonverbal, and then your solitary learners who learn by doing things on their own, learning how to get something done on their own, and they don't need much help. So I have to take into consideration that not everybody learns the same. And one way that I do this is when the student comes into my room, well, actually, when you run a resource room, you have to start by, I give this all of the staff, it's a form, and they fill out this form, and the form asks what the student is lacking in. Is it their skills in math are not good, their skills, they need help with reading, they need help with language, or their cognitive abilities are not good, and that simply means how they learn. They can't process thoughts or abilities. And I had a student that I worked with this past year whose cognitive ability was not good, and that's what the teacher checked. He's in there because he has cognitive, he's lacking in the cognitive area. So what I did was I kind of helped this student because that meant he was having various problems, mental problems or activities that he wasn't able to work through, learning problems. And so I would sit down with him every day, and we worked on social skills because usually kids who have those issues are not socially inept. They cannot socialize well with other students. So we worked on social skills. We worked on how to follow directions. We worked on learning how to take turns. And these are things that kids who have that the cognitive deficient, these are things that they don't know how to do. And so you sit down, you work with them, you play games with them, teaching them how to take turns at a game, being a good loser at a game, things like that. So so that's kind of what I do. I also give the students the Woodcock-Johnson reading inventory, reading and math inventory. And those are for all new students who come to JCA. I'm testing them. And I'm also testing kids who are in my resource program with that Woodcock-Johnson test too. That's a good indicator as to, you know, right when you finish with that test, what level that student is in. If they're working on second grade level, first grade level, or whatever, you know, that test is a good indicator. And it, once you figure it up right at the end, you know right where to start the student. And so I can tell the teacher or show the teacher, this is where he's at, this is where I'm working with him at, things like that. So, but that's an excellent test to give students. So that's kind of how I assess students, and that goes along with making sure that I know what kind of learner this student is. you know, so that I know that if he's going to come in my room, I need to know where he's at, where he's working at, and how far, if he's behind in grade level. So, you know, but that test really shows me how. But like I said, I have to know what kind of learner this student is, because it could,
so
the student
like
could come into
my IEP or something, or just kind of a recommendation in the beginning.
No, the IEP is totally different from this.
Okay.
This is just the learning styles are just how a person learns, you know, because I never thought in terms of when I first started out that I thought everybody could go in the classroom like I did and sit down and learn, you know, go to school and learn. But all kids can't do that, you know, because if they had students who were ADD or ADHD when I was in school, I didn't know anything about it, you know, because kids came in that room and sat down and did their work.
You didn't
have all this fooling around and not doing your work and that kind of thing and jumping all over the, because I've had kids that have run around the room and did and like that, and I didn't know that until I talked to the parent. I knew something was wrong, but I talked to the parent. They tell me he's ADD or he's ADHD, and a lot of people don't want to put their kids on medicine. And when with my own son, my youngest son, when he was in elementary school, fifth grade, getting ready to go to middle school, he started showing ADD signs, attention deficit disorder signs. He was doing things, and I did not want to put him on medicine. But, you know, some kids, you have to do that. This is my own child. I never tell a parent, put your kid on medicine, you know, or anything like that. That's their own choice. But some kids need that. And if they don't have it, it's hard for them to learn. But me as an educator, I still have to work with a kid parent has chosen not to put him on medicine. Just because I chose to put mine on medicine, and that was the best thing for him, I can't, you know, I can't tell another parent, put your kid on medicine, that's going to solve everything. You know, it helps the kid to give them a little relaxation and helps them to be able to settle down so they can learn. But I'm not an advocate to tell people to put your kids on medicine. I know that alternative schools are necessary. I didn't think so 40 years ago, but I know alternative schools are necessary because not everybody learns the same way. So not everybody can be like me, go in that room and sit down and not say anything and learn. You know, because you got the kids that are jumping all over the room and the kids who are doing all these other things and mouthing back to you and doing things, you know, and like that. So you have to plan and prepare for those kinds of things. Because not everybody's going to go in there and sit down. I don't have kids that come every day and sit down in my room, you know, but I am an advocate of, I'm the teacher in the room, and I have order in that room. You have to have order in the classroom. You cannot have kids who are, and I'm reading a book called Lost at School, and that's a good book about helping you learn to deal with kids who have these issues and have these problems. Even though I've dealt with it for years, you know, I've dealt with the ADD kids who are jumping all over the room. And I remember myself one time I had one classroom, and this was the first grade classroom, and I had 9 mischievous boys. 9.
Was that Walt?
9 little ones. No. That was a king. I had 9 mischievous boys, 9 of them in that classroom, and they were driving me nuts every day, the same boys. One would pop off, then the other one would pop off. The whole group was, and I finally said to myself, I got to do something to get, nobody's learning anything if I'm putting out this fire and putting out that. So I made it really special for each of those kids in that classroom. I had 23 kids. But I ran off a piece of the paper with happy face. You either got a happy face or you got a frown face, or you got a straight face, which meant you were okay, but not real. So I made that so important and so special that those kids all wanted to get a happy face. Eventually,
yes.
All of them were getting them because I came from a special ed background, so I knew I had to do something to get them turned around. They were first graders. You know, they can't, you know, they couldn't read a point sheet, but they could relate to a happy face or a frown face or, you know, upside down face where I was calling their parents. You know, I explained it to them, explained
yeah,
it to the parents and everything, and that worked for me and in my classroom with those 9 mischievous boys. 9
All
of them.
Right.
So,
nine,
you know, but it
yeah.
takes, you just have to know. You have to, yeah, and sometimes it's trial and error. You know, some things work and some things don't, but you have to keep going. So that's kind of how I do things and how I run things.
Well, let's
now,
get to the callers. Man, you guys are really
okay.
giving an extensive layout. I appreciate it. Let me go to my wife first. I see she's on here. Honey,
okay.
Can you hear
Hi,
me?
Hi, Marie.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, we're fine. How are you?
I'm well. I'm listening to you. You know, I never heard so much passion and so much attentiveness and so much care and love that you have for the education, for the kids. And these kids, well, all kids need to have teachers that care, that give
they
them
do.
The attention that you are giving because of the fact
they
that,
do.
You know, we talk about, you know, in the beginning, how the kids are lacking, how the kids are this. But when I hear from you is I hear so much passion and I hear so much, you know, they're not just students. I mean, what you call them, numbers. They're just showing up. They're human beings, and you see that from second grade to high school to, you know, all levels, and I love that. So I was listening. I just stopped doing what I was
yeah.
doing just to hear what you were saying, and that was just, to me, that was so fulfilling to know that there are teachers out there like you who really take out time for the children because it's so essential. We don't talk about the positiveness of the teachers. We talk about the negative, how the kids are not learning, da, da, da. But this is what needs to be told also. So I thank you today. That was beautiful. I just sat back and listened and learned.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm like, wow, that's my sister-in-law. They doing it. So that's beautiful. I love this. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Amen, amen. All right, let's go to Mom real quick. See Mom's online. You there, Mom?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, sisters. How y'all doing?
Fine. How are you?
Doing good. I just want everybody to know that these two young ladies here, even though we're in our advanced age, as Phil put it, we can call that if we want to, girls. That's our business. They are like, to me, they have been like some of the stars of the family because
yeah.
they have stuck out in education where I know a lot of folks have walked away from the school systems because of the wildness of the kids and the kids doing the kind of things that Sister was talking about, jumping off the tables and cussing out the
yeah.
teacher and all of that. And they have, and many people that were good teachers have walked away. They could not handle that. And even though they had the education behind them, they just couldn't handle it. But you two have stuck in there down through the years. And we've heard about Counselor Lois and just, you know, teacher and all that. And the kids that I have even had come through my church have had you all or been in schools where you all were. And so you all were kind of like the stars of the school because some of them couldn't tell y'all apart. They didn't know which one you were. And so if I tell them, one of my cousins, oh, yeah, Sister Ali Boston, da, 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 da. They always had something positive to say. And the kids I have in my church are kids. I mean, these kids are street kids. But those kids had positive things to say about the two of you when they had come into either been in your classroom or been in the school where you were or something, you know, something. And so,
mm-hmm.
and I want to say this about both of you, and y'all probably don't know this, but my mother and I always had an ongoing argument because I didn't go to school the way you all went. And because I really believe you all were called to education. I really believe when you said that's your calling,
yes.
I believe that. I believe it. And everybody's not called to education. And I wasn't called to education.
No.
I was called to peace. But after I got in, after a while into the ministry or whatever, when the opportunity came around to get education, I did that basically for my mother because she just had a big deal with her that I didn't go. Oh, my God, the world is coming to an end. And you got a high IQ, and you should have went to school like sisters, and you didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. And we went, that was our running argument for years. And so when the opportunity came for me to get my degree, even in my calling, in my chosen field of ministry, I began to do that. And I remember when I got my bachelor's degree, I was all excited. And then when I got my master's, and then mother was here, thanks to my brother, because by the time I was able to get my PhD and my doctorate, I was not able to travel. And so we had the preachers from the college come here to do a revival, and he graduated me here in my own pulpit, and Peeve had mom here. And when I, when I got my, she was here. And when I got my degree, I went over there and sat by her and showed it to her. And she looked at it and she looked at me. And she said, "You got a doctorate?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she asked Dr. Smith, "Are you accredited?" are you an accredited school? And my daughter going to this school. And he said, "Yes, ma'am. We have her accredited." And he kind of explained to her about the school, the ministerial thing and all.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just elated. But I did that for her because she always admired how you all had went to school. And it was always a running argument about, why I didn't go to Simpson and why I didn't go to Iowa State and why I didn't go here and why I didn't go there. But I know that was not that I shouldn't have went, and why I didn't go to Drake. All that's, ain't nothing wrong with that. But that was not my calling. That's not the way the Lord sent me, but I was able to get my education, and I want you to know a lot of it was because I had to try to keep up with y'all to keep mother from fussing. you all were the inspiration to go, because honestly, I what I was doing, I didn't feel like I really needed papers, but when opportunity presented itself, and it did after, many, many years, then I went ahead to do that because I knew that would make her happy, because she was so impressed with the education that you all had and what you all were doing, and which is very impressive. She had every right to be impressed because it is extremely impressive. And I'm more impressed with how you all stuck it out, because Phyllis, you and I, I've talked to you about some things went on in your classroom. I'm like, mm-mm. They wouldn't have seen me the next day. I'd have been at home in the house. Donnell said, tell y'all hi.
Okay. Yes,
yeah, right. Yeah, but I'd like, mm-mm. I knew that had to be a calling for you to go through some stuff you went through, even with some of them parents,
Oh, yeah.
I said, you had to be called to that, honey, because I would have been I know that. The Lord did not call me to do that. I don't have that temperament. But she ain't even lying about it. But this city of Des Moines has been blessed and is still being blessed, because you all have stuck in there down through the years. Down through, since we were kids, this is what you all have done. And for those of you that might be listening to us, there's just a few months between their age and mine. I was born in November. They were born in August. So we're all kind of right here together in our advanced age situation. and we were raised we're cousins. But we were kind of raised like sisters in a way that our family's different.
Yeah.
We're just different. You was a kid in the family. You just was a kid in the family, and you wasn't no big eyes and all that. We didn't have that.
Yep.
So we all know each other and what we've done because we were raised that way. We were raised like that, and so it was very inspiring. And I just want you to know that I have been very proud to be associated and be a relative of you all's, because people in the city talk about what you all have done for their kids. I have had people come through my church, and I know them kids because I had to deal with them myself, and I'm like renegades, you know. And but they were blessed, you know, because they didn't have – see, they don't have no structure at home, and then they come to you. They used to get off the chandelier. They're not used to sitting down. They used to run all around the room, swinging off the chandelier. And then they come to y'all's classroom. They expect y'all to be able to raise the kids. They raise them all, and they expect y'all to raise them. You all have done some of that.
Yes.
You all have done that. And it has been a blessing to the city. And so if anybody wants to know what it's like to be, to really have, and see, these are unsung heroes. Ain't nobody passing out no plaques to them talking about y'all wonderful and all that. But I'm just giving you your flowers while you live because I have kids that have come through
my ministry. Well,
I just want you to know that I've had people come through my ministry, and I know them kids was something else. But they were able to learn many things because of y'all. You know, and they, you know, and
Mom, you said something else, huh? They were something else.
No, they some of them still something else. but they went to school, was in their classroom, or they was in the schools where they were, and they always knew you don't act like that in their classroom. They wouldn't allow that. You had to have consent. And I appreciate y'all. I'm telling you the truth, because many kids in this
room
not have gotten an education had it been for the two of you. They would not, because everybody wasn't going to see them. No, everybody wasn't going to fool with them. You know, so they would have gave up on them kids, and the kids would have been, and you know, we all know that if you don't have an educate, can't read by the third grade, they make a prison cell for you somewhere, especially our poor little boy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how they do them kids. If they can't read by, because you can't read, you can't do social studies, you can't do all this other stuff because you can't read.
Nope.
So you all have had patience. You all have hung in there. And even when I was over at DMAC, I was proud to be over there. I'm over there trying to get my little education because I'm coming behind y'all. And y'all was up there doing something, helping people that could not read or write there. I mean, looked like they gave y'all the hardest cases. I don't know what it was. Looked like y'all got the hardest cases. Give them to them. The twins can handle it. Looked like they throw that stuff at y'all. But you all did handle it. And these were I'm talking about adults couldn't read and couldn't write and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you all were DMAC, and y'all was able to help them in that up there in that lunch room. So I just want to say, as a person that have watched you all do what you do, you know, I do what I do, and I do it proudly. But to watch what you all do, I do believe it's a calling. I do. I believe it because I don't see how you all would, especially poor Phyllis with them kids she had. Lord Jesus, I don't know how in the world. I don't know how in the world you know that girl, you know, we talked about some of that stuff, and I'm like, why did you go back to the, you went back, you know, what's going on? Oh my God, what, she went back? Oh Lord, because I would have went home and stayed. Now I'm just gonna tell you the truth. I'd have been in my house. They come in, I'd have been in my house. I'm telling you now, would have been. And even Lord, you over there accounting. I'd have been at home, baby. I know what them schools are like. I'd have been at my house. Where's the counselor? She went home. She went home. Advocated her position and went home. But you all stuck in there, and the kids have been better for it. And some of them now are grown and older kids and whatever, and got kids of their own. But you are the reason they have an education. You two are the reason that they have an education. They wouldn't have gotten no high school diploma, no nothing, hadn't been for y'all. But you all hung in there with them and had confidence in them and let them know that even though they didn't learn like everybody else, they could still learn. You know, they could
still
y'all taught them that, sister. That's what y'all have to accept this. You know, I know y'all don't. Y'all trying to get me off the phone, but I get off when I get ready. I'm Crystal, remember? I want people to know the impact that you two have had in this city for these kids. I want people to know that because Des Moines would not, I know a lot of the kids would not have gotten diplomas, would not have walked anybody's stage had they not come across you guys. And so appreciate you all and what you have done.
Well, thank you.
Even appreciate the inspiration you've been to me, because I would not have it, because I didn't care nothing about degrees. I didn't care nothing about that. I'm busy passing out food and clothes. What I need with a degree. I'm out there on the street corner. I didn't see no sense in that. But because of you all's example and the fact that my mother was so enamored with education, I now have my education. So you all have a great part in that. And I know you didn't know that, but that's a fact. Because, honey, we have knocked down, drag out. Lois and Phyllis went to school. Why couldn't you go to school? You always want to take care of somebody else. You didn't take care of yourself. Ah, blah, blah, blah. Oh, God. It was ongoing for years. But when the opportunity came, I'm going to do this. And because I have had so much life experience in ministry, that helped me to accelerate some things. But I really wanted, and when I was able to sit down with my mother and show her my doctor of humanities and doctor of ministerial studies, and when she figured out the school was accredited, I just put in my, I thought within myself I had to thank y'all, because if it hadn't been for y'all, I wouldn't even have tried to do that, because I didn't feel like I needed that. You know, that's for what I was doing. I didn't feel like I needed that. So thank you, because since then it has proven that I did need to do it. So thank you, I, for being the example of my family.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Mother, for that. Lois, Mom brought that up. How many people do you think you guys have taught over the years? I know it's probably hard even knowing the number, but
in 40 years, I say just thousands of kids. I don't know for sure, but I say just thousands of kids we work with, doing the public schools, and now they're working in the Christian school. I that's what I would say.
Yeah,
thousands. And can I just, before somebody else comes in, I just wanted to say this one thing here. In the years that I worked as a teacher and school counselor and so on, like that's kind of like what Susie said there, wasn't given Teacher of the Year award, wasn't given Counselor of the Year award, but because of all these students that come up to you and thank you for helping them when you see them on the street, sometimes I remember their names, sometimes I don't, that lets me know that I was doing something to help somebody. So that's my Student of the Year, and that's my Counselor of the Year award. And one other comment, Mike, and then I'll stop. When I worked at Edmonds, I had a boy that was kind of a misfit. He was kind of a misfit, and kids didn't like him, so he was the counselor's friend. So he was with me a good part of the day, and I'd let him help me in the kindergarten and first grade classrooms. And then he left Edmonds and went on to middle school. And then probably about 3 or 4 years later, a tall, lanky kid walked back into Edmonds school, and I was still there, and he asked for me, and people didn't know who he was. And I looked at him. I knew he was a student that was the counselor's friend, that I worked with him, and he was at my side practically all day long or off and on all day and helping me and so forth. And he told me he had something that he wanted me to help him with, that being a student at Edmonds and working with me, he felt comfortable coming back to get the help that he needed. He didn't feel that he could get it whatever school he was at. I think he was in high school then. I don't know. But anyway, we began to talk.
From grammar school to high school, and you made that much of an impact. That's awesome.
And he walked back into Edmonds, and he told me, he said, "Mrs. Edmonds, my friend committed suicide." And I didn't know what to do. All I could think about was you. So I'm here. And you know what? That spoke volumes to me, you know.
Yeah.
Here, a kid that I worked with years ago felt like this was a place where he felt comfortable coming and getting the help that he needed. And he was a teenager then, walked right back into the school and felt at home because that's where he had gotten some valuable training and information and things like that, and he knew who he could come to. And I said, I'll never forget
place.
That.
The safe
I'll
place.
Never, yeah, safe place. I'll never forget that. And so I didn't get Counselor of the Year, but I feel like that because of the things that I get with students, that is my Counselor of the Year award.
I have similar stories, too, you know, where kids have come back to me and after having been with me for in elementary school and then in high school, they've come back. I had a girl one time because I had a Just Say No to Drugs Club at Wallace, and that's at elementary. And she learned about the harmful effects of drugs and things like that. We saw films. We went places. We had people come in and talk. It was just, it was a good club. It was a club where kids had to be in third grade, and she couldn't wait to be in third grade to be in this club. So she learned things in the club and then went on to middle and high school. And then I remember in high school, her freshman year, she came back to me, and I knew, couldn't think of who she was, but she said, she told me her name, and she said, I just want you to know that after being with you and like that, and now I'm in high school, I want you to know that I'm still drug and alcohol free. And I said, my goodness. And she's in high school. And I thought, she told me her name, and I thought, we talked a little while, and she's gotten a lot out of that Just Say No to Drugs Club. And because she came back and told me in her freshman year, I'm still drug and alcohol free. And like Lois said, that speaks volumes to you when you've taught somebody and they come back and acknowledge that you helped them.
Yes, it does.
But you helped them. And I think of the number of kids that I've helped along the way, the number of kids who I could have turned my back on, those BD students, those are hard to handle, you know, because they don't principals don't want those programs in their buildings because they are hard to handle. There's students that are jumping off tables. There's students that are running around the building. There's students that are cussing out people and doing all these things. And you know, I really, really tried to, you know, to stick with them and help them. That was my goal, because when I was hired with the district, I was hired to be a BD teacher. And I thought, well, I learned a lot that year that I was that teacher's associate in that BD classroom. And so I felt like these are the kids that need me. These are the kids that I think, I know they're in trouble. I know they need help. Well, they're breaking up the toilet seats in the bathroom. I had one boy doing that.
Lord have mercy.
Breaking up the toilet. So, you know, I told him, I said, you know what? You're going to have to pay for that. That those don't come free. So he had
to do janitorial
work around the building. I made him do janitorial work around the building, helping to, you know, things like that. I didn't give up on him. I could have had him expelled from the toilet seats, you know.
Right.
But it's so, you know, I've had him do all kinds of things.
That would have been, it wouldn't have been a pleasant sight. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I've dealt with all of that, and I haven't turned my back on them because those are the kids that need you.
Those are the kids
that are crying out for help.
That's true.
Those are the kids that they either aren't getting it at home or they're having issues, and they all come with baggage. One student who her and her mom drove around all night. Her house, her home was her car. They drove around all night.
Can you
imagine how that student was when it was time for them
to
come to
school?
She's tired. She's not had any sleep or very little sleep. She's had no breakfast. I always keep breakfast bars and things so the kids can have. But, you know, so you never know what's going on in a person, in a student's life, you know. And even those nine naughty boys, you know, I could have turned my back on them, but I said, nope, I got to find a way to deal with these nine naughty boys. And that's what I did. And I'm still working with, you know, now I'm to the point where kids know me, and I tell them in the room that I'm in now, I give you three opportunities. If you can't get it together in three opportunities, then it's time for us to do something else. But generally, they get it together. They get it together because they don't want to go talk to the principal. They don't want me to call home. You know, they don't want to go back to their classrooms and lose their recess. You know, so they generally turn things around. And I'll give them time out. I said, do you need some time out? Do you need some time to go sit and think about how you're going to behave? Mm-hmm, yeah. And I had one boy that was, he would throw fits. He would throw fits. And I would, you know, I had this paper that I had him write. And he wrote that paper one time. And after that, I would tell him, now, do we need to write that paper again? Because that paper says what you did and how you're going to turn it around, and it's going home to your mother. And he didn't want to write the paper anymore, so he stopped his behaviors. You have to find things that will work with kids so that, you know, so that your whole classroom isn't upset, you know. And even in the resource room, like I said, I give them these three opportunities, and I explain to them what it is. It's like a baseball game. You get three strikes and you're out. Pull it together, or I'm going to follow through, and that's the key. You have to follow through with what you told them that you're going to do.
Yeah,
you have to
yeah.
follow through with that. You know, there has to be some follow-through. There has to be some accountability. So I really try to work with the students and explain to them, this is how I run it. This is how it is. You know, I'm in charge. You're not. And so I take it at that. They have to know that I'm the leader of that classroom, and we all have some say in it, but I'm the leader of the classroom. So that's kind of how I I kind of run things. Lois is telling me that we should probably talk about. According to you, there might be some other people that want to comment.
She's saying we need to maybe talk about
the difference between Christian education and public school education.
Yes, yes.
So do you want us to go mention that or what?
Let me see if I can get a couple more callers. We'll come back and get that.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely
All
wanted.
Right.
I know there's definitely a difference. I want to see who else is on here. All right, we'll come over there. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good morning. It still is. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Who is this?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
This is Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy, what's going on?
Oh, I didn't know y'all could hear me, man.
We can hear you now, yes.
Okay.
Did you hear your mom and your Aunt Phyllis?
Yes, I did. Yes, indeed. Hey, Mom, Aunt Phyllis.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Susie. Hey, Marie. How y'all doing? Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Got any comments to what they were talking about? You come up in the household, so what you got to say?
I just want to say that my mom and my aunt, they always, me having ADHD, my mom and my aunt, they've always been peaceful and patient with me. And besides the Lord Almighty, those here on earth, those are my two teachers that I can go to about anything. Like if I ever have any issues or problems or questions, those are the two people who I come to first, you know. And like I said, they know a lot about children who have had ADHD, that have had ADD in the classrooms, because I was one of them. And I know my mom, she used to have me go to seminars. I used to go to bring a friend, a buddy of mine, Jeff, and we used to sit and speak with teachers about the things that we went through in class that kept us attentive, and the things that kept us that made our minds drift sometimes, or the things that upset us in class and things of that nature. We got to give them feedback to help them to be able to better themselves with a stronger position in the classroom, to be able to help them to be able to maintain the kids in the BD classes and the special ed classes and things of that nature, you know. And you know, my aunt, she's right. You know, a teacher has to have order in the class. And my mom, I sat there and I watched how kids, well, they weren't kids now, but they're grown. I've seen them come up and say, "Hey, Mrs. Edwards, do you remember me? I was one of your former students." I've heard that all throughout history, you know. Matter of fact, the boy just earlier, RJ, Robert, I can't think of his last name, but RJ, my mom knows who I'm talking about. He just commented on one of the statuses, and he was, as she says, the counselor's friend. You know?
That's all right.
Yeah, you know, and I'm just so thankful and so grateful that I got blessed with good people to be in my life and that are part of my family. You know, I mean, people like Susie, who's out there preaching the word, you know, and everyone has a different calling, you know. I mean, I personally feel that one day I truly have a calling to the ministry. I truly do believe that because the Lord's worked in my way, in my life, in so many different ways, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful to have relatives that I consider that are rock stars and are superstars out there in the world, you know. Because Mike, I watch your show, as I call it, the church ministry out there at Golgotha. I listen to you guys out there, and on Sundays, and me and Mom listen, and I tell my aunt about it too, and so forth and so on. And I always comment on Susie's posts and clips because I can relate to a lot of these things. That, you know, with the Lord working in everyone's life. And I know my mom and my aunt have been a blessing and a godsend to so many students in this world, because there are so many students that have had teachers that did not care if they passed. And, you know, I mean, I had teachers calling this man every day to come in and discipline me from Meyer Hall status from back in my day, and you know, mm-hmm. and my mom and my aunt, you know, those were the only two teachers that I can honestly say in my lifetime that truly care and have passion about what they, I mean, like truly, truly, that I'm 100% sure. And my mom and my aunt and a man named Joe Russo are like the reason why I have my high school diploma, because I remember so many times I wanted to throw in the towel so many times, man, you know, just from all the things that were going on. But my mom and my aunt were like, you know, always be there to give me that advice, man, that encouragement, you know, and say, hey, you know, you're almost there. You got what it takes. Keep pushing, you know, no matter what these teachers say, no matter what these students are doing to you, you know, it's about you and your education. And my mom and my aunt, they both said this. They said my grandma said this. Once you get your education, no one can take it away from you.
That's
you
right.
know?
That's right.
And that's something that stuck with me that I tell my son, you know, because my boy, he's 16 and he wants to, you know, at one point in time he wants to do Job Corps or something of that nature. But, you know, I just feel so blessed, though, that I have such good people in my family that truly care and that God has placed in my life and that's placed in other people's lives, you know, truly, truly. I've been sitting here listening. I don't know if you guys can hear me or not, but I just been listening.
I just brought you on now, so we just now hear you.
Okay. Yeah, you know. And,
all right. Well, I'm so glad that you called in, and it, man, you just to have your position and your intake adds a whole lot to the story. So we thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Let me put you back on mute and let's go to another caller.
All right. I'll be listening, guys.
All right, my brother. Cuz.
Okay.
All right, hello. Good afternoon. Who am I speaking with? Hello. Can you hear me? 360 number. Can you hear me? All right. One more time. Can you Can you hear me? Can you hear me talking with you? All right, let me go to the next one. Maybe they don't want to talk. I think this is Satira. Satira, is that you?
It's me.
H-Town in the house. What's going on?
Not much. Hi, everybody. Hello, family.
Hi.
Hi. So it's in the West.
You get a chance to hear. how much did you hear?
I caught the tail end of Aunt Lois and all of what Aunt Phyllis said.
Okay. Any comments?
Well, you know, I don't talk much, but it's very, very nice to have educators in the family. And the reason why I say that is from my own perspective as a parent. I'm very serious about my son's education. I have been since I knew he came into existence. So, as Jimmy said, education is important, and I do remember Aunt Carmel saying, once you get your education, nobody can take it away from you.
Yes. We were drilled with
that. On the other hand, I feel that we don't show enough appreciation to our educators of color. I say that from, again, my personal experience when I was in elementary school. I didn't go to pre-K. When I started kindergarten up until, I believe, second grade, I went to Thomas Jefferson Elementary School. And we only had one teacher of color that was a woman, and I still remember her to this day. Her name was Gray Athenia Woodson Bales. I remember her very well. And then when I went on to Mitchell, we didn't have any at all. Both of those schools, I was one of the very few people of, dark skin color. And it was very important to see and to look at Miss Bales and see her when she would come to school, you know, dressed nice and smelling nice and, you know, actually caring about the kids. I can actually remember all of the teachers of color that I had throughout my education there. Mr. Cooley from Hoyt, and let's see, in high school I had Ms. Spicer, and that's not many. I think that's three or four, right? And then the principal at Hoyt, I don't remember her name. I believe her first name was Ophelia, but I don't remember her last name. So that's four throughout 12 years of school. It's important for little kids of color to see themselves and let them know that, hey, when I come to school, this person, yeah, understands me. So I took that into consideration when I started, you know, my son's, when it was time for him to go to school from pre-K on. We enrolled him in private Christian-based school. It was called Global Learning Village here in Houston. And they taught those kids Spanish, Mandarin, English, and I believe that that's where he got his, that's a great academic start, not to mention, you know, my brain. But all of those teachers were of color, they were educated, you know, and they were professionals. The school that we went to after Harvey, all of the students pretty much, that school was 89% African-American, and the other was Hispanic. And all of the teaching and all the staff were of color. And now we're going into high school, and we're going into a predominantly African-American staff and student base. The only difference is this is public school, and we're not used to that. So education is important, right? And
every
as
dynamic
a parent,
is gonna make, can have an impact. So you're right.
Yeah, I take that very seriously. I always knew that when I'm, you know, when I found out I was having a boy, the first thing that came to my mind was he's going to Morehouse, and that's still what we're pushing for. So I'm gonna be quiet, but it's good to hear everybody. And yeah, glad to be here.
Glad you're on, Cuss.
Yeah.
Praise God. Let's see if I think this is Tito. Let's see if I can get to him. Might have to call him. Let's see if it works. Tito, is that you? Can you hear me? Okay, I don't see. All right, I think I have to call him. I think let's see if this works. New feature. I'm trying to see. Don't dial, okay.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Tito?
Not much.
Were you listening in?
No, I tried to, but we're on the road right now.
It looked like he was listening in. That's why I was trying to call in to see if you had any questions.
Yeah, I heard part of it. I heard some of it.
Okay. Any comment on what you heard?
Huh?
Any comment on what you heard?
Well, just a little bit about, you know, the teaching, but I didn't really get much of a few people on the road.
Okay.
Maybe like 3 or 5 minutes or something.
Well, that's good. Well, at least got to try out the collar here, and it actually does work. So that's good. Y'all be safe out there on the road, man.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yeah,
what'd you say?
You talked to Keith?
No, we're still online right now.
Oh.
You're on the radio show right now.
Oh, I know
that number,
but.
So give me a holler when y'all get back home.
All right.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All
right. Okay. You got to hang up on your end, Tito. Okay. All right. Lois and Phyllis, let's go back to the two of you and talk about the difference between Christian education and secular education. I know you guys have seen some differences over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to start off with, Joshua is a Christian school. Joshua Christian Academy is a Christian school. And coming from the public school to a Christian school, it's really different. And I say that, like I said, when I went through the doors of the school, I would always pray to myself in the public schools, that, Lord, let this be a good day. Let this be a day that I can help someone else. That was my own personal prayer as I went through the schools each day, and I worked at a lot of different schools in Des Moines. But coming to mm-hmm. Joshua Christian Academy, I noticed that it was really different. Like every day at school, we have chapel. And in my particular building, the secondary, we have chapel twice a day. And chapel was a chance for kids to learn, pray. It was a praise and worship service. Kids could learn Bible verses and sing Christian songs. And these are things that don't happen in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our advisors at the school, she came every day and she taught the kids how to sign language the different verses from the Bible, which was really kind of neat because that's something that, you know, just don't happen. But she's very skilled in that, and she taught the kids that. They even learned to do it in Spanish. So, yeah, it was just a nice, it was a wonderful way to start your day in the morning. And then after that, then you felt like you could go to your classes. And with mine, I'd start the kids with prayer. You can't do that in the public schools. So I would, we would pray about our day and pray about the...
That is totally different, yeah.
Right, pray about the how the state and what the governor and the senators and like pray for them and pray that they make the right decisions for the state and so on like that, which we couldn't do that in the public school. So prayer is really, really important, and kids learn that. And like I said, at my class, we started off with prayer, and everyone had to take their turn doing a prayer. So that was really important in starting your day. And like I said, we had chapel twice a day.
Yeah, and we're over there at JCA Maine, where I'm at, we have chapel just once a day, but it's a praise and worship service where the kids are really getting involved and the kids are really learning, and kids are being brought to Christ, wanting to come to Christ and wanting to learn more about Christ. And kids have been saved right there in chapel, right there in your classrooms. You know, when you're ministering to a student where you can't minister to them in public school. You know, like I mentioned, kids come to school with baggage, and you can actually, if somebody has problems, you can sit and pray with that student and ask God to help them get through whatever it is that they're going through. And that makes a big difference, because you can't do that in the public school.
It's so important.
I've had
Bible being taught in the classes.
Yeah, and at Maine, they have teachers teach Bible. They do it at South too. They at all three of our campuses, the kids are teaching. They're being taught Bible. That's one of the classes that they all take. They take Bible. They have no choice when they come into chapel in the morning. Everybody's told that they have to participate, because, you know, that's why we're there. And the kids enjoy the lively music and the verses and learning the verses. Our advisor will have the kids come up and they'll do kind of like I forget what it's called, where they have to, she goes down the line and they have to say what the next line in the verse is, sparkle. They say that, and the kids look forward to doing that, look forward to, because they learn those verses and they know what they are. Now, if not, then they sit down, you know, and some of the kids don't know all of them, but most of the kids know the verses. They work at it, because they don't not only do it in chapel, but they do it in their classrooms too. So it's a wonderful opportunity for kids to learn about Christ and learn, you know, as some, like I said, some kids have been saved right there, right there in your classroom or right there in chapel, you know, and it's just a wonderful opportunity. Whereas you can't really do that in public school, even though I had a child one time that came to me and wanted to know. And, well, what do you do? And you got a kid who's after you about, I need to know, I forget what it was she wanted to know. But I told her, I said, well, during your recess time, come to me and we'll discuss it. So she did come to me, and I thought she wasn't, but she did come to me. Then I did kind of instruct her, but then I told her, I said, you know, this is something I'm happy that you want to know, but, you know, this is something we can't talk about here at school. So you really need to, I referred it back to her parents, you know, talk to your mom, talk to your dad, talk to somebody at your church, you know, and things like that. Where that Joshua, you can actually talk to them about whatever it is that they're wanting to know, and you can pray with them. Yeah. So in fact, when I go into my classroom every day, I say, who's my prayer warrior today? And somebody wants to be the prayer warrior, and that means that person has to give a vibrant prayer about our day, about our snack that we're about to eat, about anything, you know, and some kids do bring in, and these are little kids, they bring in world situations, you know. I pray for our president today, one student said. And I said, okay, we'll pray for the president, and like that. So, you know, it's just a different atmosphere when you can see a kid having a bad day, and you can say, let's pray about it. Let's pray that your day turns around. And they're really happy that you spent the time to pray with them. And you can't, you know, like Lois and I have been saying, you can't do that in public school. But over here in Christian school, Christian education, you can. And you feel really good about it, especially when somebody's been saved. And that's happened more times than not, right over here at Joshua Christian Academy. More times than not, kids have been saved. Yeah.
Okay, and then one other thing that I'd like to say about the curriculum that I use to teach social studies, there are scriptures to back up the passages that I'm teaching the kids about, you know, and I like that. I'll have the kids, we'll talk about whatever it is. I believe history tells a story, and I tell them the story each day, what I want them to learn. And then at the end of the passage, there's a scripture that talks about what we just read. So it's the things that that I teach the kids are all backed up in scripture, and our books come from the Becker curriculum, and it's just backed up with scripture, and which is good. You really don't see that in Des Moines public schools, but it's biblical based, and I like teaching that. I like to let them know that, for example, the continents over here in the Western Hemisphere were hidden. The explorers didn't come this way; they went east. And when they finally did start coming over here, I tell them, and it says it in the book too. God kept these continents hidden for a reason. And, you know, for example, if Spaniards had come here before the other explorers, this whole area would have been different. So everything's backed up by scripture in what I teach, and I like that. I like that. You don't see that in Christian public schools at all.
I mean, life is so interconnected, and for it to be pulled away, it's mighty challenging. I mean, you guys have been doing it because you've had to do it that way, but I can hear the joy and the betterment that the fact that you can actually do it now with, you know, that you can, you know, that you feel free, that you can pray with them and talk with them about even religious things as well, because you're talking about the whole child that you're trying to help and raise up and bring up. And when you leave that spiritual part out, especially when they're with you, you know, more time than they are with their parents or et cetera, that leaves room for issues to happen. So, you guys have really done a great job today in helping us to understand a lot of things. And we open the lines up to, again, to those that have been on and see if they may still have some comments or some things in regards to what we're talking about. Mom, you want to go first? You got anything else?
Sure. Y'all, can you hear me?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. You know, the one thing I liked about it when they got the Christian school and Reverend Ratliff and them got their Christian school together, I liked it because they invited those of us from the community to come in, and you could read to the kids, and you can interact with the kids, and you didn't, you know, they because they wanted people that were saved to be there for the kids to see the example of somebody to save. I really like that. I don't know if it's like that now because they've been going for many years and got quite a bit more going. It might not be what's going on now, but that's the way it started. And they actually recruit from the community, from the Christian community, people that wanted to work with the kids. And my thing is, this way the children can see an example. But when you go to the public school, it's just secular. There's nothing about God, a mention, nothing, and then it's bouncing off the walls and what have you. But when they go to the Christian school, they get to see what it's like to be a Christian. You might even, you see people that actually are professing, you're professing Christ, and you come in to help them and whatnot. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing for our community. I know a lot of people are mad now because now they got the vouchers. They can leave the public school and come to the Christian school. But I think it's a blessing. Our children now have a chance to really be holistically worked with, holistically. Not just to educate, not just the mental part of the secular part of education, but your whole, whatever's going on with you, you can get that prayed for and covered in the blood in the Christian school. And so I'm a proponent of, I'm not much, a lot of stuff that our governor's doing, I'm not a proponent, and use me lying. But when it comes to those vouchers where we can take our children out of the public system and put them in the Christian school, I'm for that. A lot of parents don't know they have that option now. They don't know, they don't keep up with current events. They don't know that. And I spend a lot of my time telling these parents, especially the ones that I know that the kids need a lot of help, you need to get your kids out of that secular situation and get them in the Christian school. Then I recommend the school where Sister and them teach, because that's really the only one I know too much about. In high school, we got Dowling, of course, but that we've had for years. But the only one I really know about for elementary, and there may be others. I just don't. Well, I know there are others now. I do. But I really push JCAC because I just like, I know who's over there. Let me say it that way. You guys are over there. Margie's over there. I know Tony's over there. I know y'all. You see what I'm saying? I know what you believe in. I know your personal testimony. Other people, I don't know them. Now, they may be wonderful. I ain't got nothing, but I don't know them. But I know y'all. And so I try to teach these kids, and I'm really trying to tell the parents. And I told Debbie Ratliff, I'm really trying to tell our parents to get our kids out of the secular school and into the Christian school so that those kids can have that experience. Because used to be grandma, mama, sister, family school. Now nobody taking the kids nowhere. The mama or grandma ain't going to school. Nobody taking them. But when they come to your school, they can have that flavor of Christianity, and I'm pushing that. I want y'all to know that. I'm pushing hard that our parents would bring them out of the public school system and put them over there, because that's about it now to pay for it, you know. I'm just saying a lot of our people in our community don't know it, sister, but I'm pushing them because I think that's what we need to do, is put them over there where you are.
Oh, great. Great.
Amen. Amen.
Maureen, you got any comments there?
I personally want to say, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. I personally want to say thank you to sisters, because, Lois and Phyllis, you have, today I just really got full off your, of just the teaching and with the gift that you're giving to the kids, the passion and the care and the attentiveness and basically helping all, not dividing, just helping all that needs you, and you're there because you're aware of that. You know, unfortunately, we have situations that are bad with kids not coming to school, and as you explained, riding around in cars and stuff like that, and you're aware of that and how you took out time to care for that child. That child needed you then, and you was there. So I just want to say publicly, I just want to say thank you for being that, just being those type of teachers. That's what is so needed.
Okay,
it's so
great.
Needed. And I guess we just need to hear more about it, because we don't hear that. And then you talked about your reward that you didn't get teacher of the year or whatever, but you did. God saw you, and you answered to your purpose. Everybody have a purpose in life. We all have our purposes.
Yeah.
And you both answer to your purposes to help those kids that you knew. God knew that those kids would come along your path
and you will be able to help them. And those are the rewards that we need to talk about, but we don't. But then again, we know God knows. And when God knows,
yes,
he has the rewards for you. And I just want to say thank you, because that is so well needed. And hi, and Jimmy came on and spoke so well about Auntie and Mommy. Thank you, Jimmy. Hi, Jimmy. And that too spoke volume, because you need that, you know, the kids saying out loud, this is what you did for me. And this, I just want to thank you. And to help, you know, we all just basically understanding that gift and understanding what you have given and understanding that so many kids are appreciative of teachers like you. And I just want to say again and again, thank you. And I grew up with my mom always saying to me, very well. Yes, I grew up, my mother said to me too, as I was growing up, there are many things that people will try to take away from you, and they probably will, and they probably can't. She said probably will and can't. But there's one thing, no matter what they, how hard they try, they can never take away your education. So that was my goal too, for continuing on with my education. So I heard that a lot growing up, and she would say that over and over again, and we're like, thank you, Mom. We heard those things. I just want to say,
yes,
no matter what happens in life,
education.
And you guys are there teaching and giving examples and being the teachers of teachers. So thank you so much. And then I went to a Christian college my first 2 years of education. I mean, after 12 years, and my mother made me. I thought I was going to some other university. She said, no, before you go anywhere, you're going to go to this Christian college first. It was 2 years, and we too had chapel. We too had Bible 101. That was essential. And then the mornings, we'd get up, we had chapel, we'd sing, we'd praise God. It was just praying. Yeah. It was just beautiful. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we were in college then. So, you know, we were kind of like, you know, step into our little world, but still we had something to ground, keep us grounded. And I just loved all this today. I really enjoyed you both, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, dear. We have another caller just came on. Let's see who this is. All right. 360, can you hear me?
Yeah,
I think that's
Michelle.
Who is this?
Shell.
Hey, Shell, what's going on, Michelle?
Yeah. Hey, what's going on?
I'll talk to you in a minute. This is the culinary art.
I know, we have it.
Yeah.
Did you
get a chance to hear your mom and your aunt?
I did.
Okay.
They did a wonderful job.
Give us some wisdom today.
They did a wonderful job, and always had that education has always been something that they both stressed to both us and Buddy and Larry in our lives. And we've always known that they've helped a lot of people throughout the world. I know, you know, people I went to school with, I went to Edmonds and she was, working at Edmonds.
Yeah,
so a lot of kids. A lot of kids that I know they're my age had her as a counselor or a teacher, and so they know them. And like when I post their pictures up for birthdays or whatever on Facebook, I swear they get so many compliments. And I'm like, I don't even get this many likes on my pictures, but they get a lot of likes. So I know they love it around the city.
That's true.
That's all right.
Absolutely,
well, so
yeah.
What you cooking up today? I know you've been laying it out down there is what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm deciding to go ahead and do some catfish and spaghetti today.
See, look at you. You're gonna make me get on the road here pretty soon. Catfish and spaghetti. Lord have mercy. Well, I'm glad you took time to call in. It's good to hear your voice, and I hope it won't be the last time we hear from. It won't be another year or so.
Oh no.
Okay, Jimmy, you still there? James,
yeah, I'm still here.
You got any final comments?
Just that I know my sister can cook. I do know that, and I'm serious, Mike. Like I see the post that you put up there, and I'm when I say mouth watering, I'm always like, man, if only you would open the shop. For real, I'm so serious. I'd be your biggest customer, literally. But I don't know. I just know that Mom and Aunt Phyllis, and hi Marie, by the way, and Mom and Aunt Phyllis, when my sister's right, you know, there's been numerous times, I swear to you, numerous times, and some people I don't even know that have come up and be like, yeah, you tell your mom or your aunt, I said, hi, man. I said, do I know you? I said, oh, they were my teacher. I said, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? And that's happened several, and I mean several times. But, you know, as far as it goes for the Christian school composed to the regular school, I wish I would have been able to have gone to Christian school because I remember in school we used to say the Pledge of Allegiance, right? They took that out of school,
yeah.
You know. They took that out of the schools. It would have been nice to have been able to pray before the day started at school. I'm looking back on all this now because I know that as when we was in school, we didn't have Bible study, and those are things that are very important, very essential because it's learning about the Word of the Lord, and there's no greater than the Alpha and the Omega, point blank, period.
Sure.
So. Yeah, you know, and I feel honored and blessed to have such good people in the family, and Mom and Phyllis, you guys are rock stars. I swear to you, you guys are rock stars.
Okay,
thank you, Jimmy.
I appreciate you guys.
Can we get him a star down there, Jimmy, somewhere downtown?
Where
you get him a star? Get him a star down there on the ground somewhere downtown.
Yeah, listen. Yeah.
That's what they do in Hollywood. We need to do that for our teachers. I agree.
You know what? Yeah. That's true. That's very true.
We gotta have an economy that starts to think like that. That you know,
yeah.
Teachers are not just first responders, but they've actually been helping guides for us all the way. And you know, whether they get a reward or not, you know, it's what you have been. I mean, where would I be without all the teaching that I've had? I mean, I'm 58 now. You know, I'm not in my advanced years. I'm 58. And so I'm working toward my advanced years, you know, but it's been rough getting it easier sometimes. So I'm looking forward to the other years. But definitely, man, I was kept so busy as a child. I didn't know anything else. But when I sit back and try to look and say, well, when was there time to do anything else? There wasn't. The mom kept me so busy. I was doing this, that, and another. I was playing basketball. I was trying to play a little baseball. I was at riding my bike. I was working. I was in every choir. I was in every band. I was, you know,
yeah.
It was a boys club. It was boys and girls club. I was a camp counselor. There just was no time. You know, I worked at the Botanical Center, so my life was a blur, but it was a good blur. And so there was no time for me to become mischievous and get in trouble. And I think sometimes that is the issue because, you know, because idle time is the devil's workshop. So, as we close out, Lord and Phyllis, being teachers, being professionals, what advice would you give to parents that, you know, man, to get them ready? Because I know you talked about like the kids that came to school and you know, they rode in the car all night and whatsoever else. What are some of the tips maybe we can give the parents or the guardians that you think would help you guys as we work together to try to develop the youth collectively? Well, is there maybe some points we got about 19 minutes left, so maybe something that you've been wanting to say for the longest.
Well, I truly think that kids need to have a good night's sleep. There needs to be a time when the television is turned off, when the games on the phone or game system needs to be shut down, and kids need to go to sleep at a good hour so they can get up and feel rested the next day. I really think that's important to do that. Mm-hmm. Kids may beg to stay up all night and so on, but they need to have a time when they can go to sleep and get that rest so that when they walk through the doors in the morning that they feel good. I think it's also important that parents feed their children in the morning. You know, don't rely on that they're going to get something from school, because sometimes they may get it and sometimes they may not get it. And if they get something, it's probably not going to be that nourishing for their brains to learn
time, yeah,
and function throughout the day. So getting a good night's sleep, getting some food that's nutritional for them, that's what I think they need. That's one thing that before we take these Iowa test assessment, and I'm not going to get off into that, but what I tell the kids is that you get a good night's sleep, you eat a good breakfast before you come to take the assessment test. And if they do that, they do better. They do better.
Yeah.
And I think in what I would offer to parents is, because I had my own son, never give up on your children. They may have attention deficit disorder. They may have whatever sociopathic disorder, whatever the disorder is, never give up on your child. Always be looking to try to find a way to help your child, whether it be get them to a doctor's appointment, get them to a specialist, get them somewhere that you're going to find some answers for your child, and so that he can be or she can be successful in school. Never give up. Because a lot of these ADD parents, you know, they've given up. They're not trying to help. I noticed I had an ADD child, and that child was doing everything. And I mean, the principal was called his first week in middle school. The principal called me every day for 2 weeks. That principal was calling me. And I could have just said, oh, well, that's your problem. But I knew if he was going to get an education, I, as his parent, had to find a way to help him. And that's exactly what I did. Don't give up on your children. Find a way to help them be successful at school. And some kids have to be helped in order to be successful. You know, you can't just expect the school to do it all. You as a parent have to do something too. And I know with my son, and you know him, you know Larry, you know he was doing everything. Legs was doing everything at school. He was at one end of the hallway when he should have been at the other end. And the people called me every day for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. So I had to find a way to help my son. And that's all I'm saying is find a way to help your children, whether it be get them to a doctor's appointment, get them to a specialist. And I'm not saying put your kid on medicine, but you got to find a way to help them. And you have to find that you have to, as a parent, have to talk to your child as well. Be a part of their lives. Be a part of their school lives. Check their backpacks when they come home. Make sure that notes and things are signed and like that. Don't just forget it. Oh, because usually teachers will put things in backpacks and they want parents to see. Or homework. Make sure that you're helping your child the best that you know how. That's all I'm saying. That's what I would like to say, because I had to help mine. And I'm telling you, the principal was calling me every day. And when he was in elementary school, they were saying, Miss Osley, come and get your child. Not come and get him. So, I mean, he was a challenging child. But I had to find a way to help him, and that's all I'm saying is find a way to help your child if your child is one that needs help.
I know that I wasn't a perfect kid coming up, but that, we didn't have all the long clinical names that they have now. And we lived right next to Martin Luther King Park, and right just was separated with mulberry bushes. So mom would say, go get that butcher knife and cut off one of them bushes, bring all the switches in there, and pull them leaves off there, sitting next to your green chair. That was the medication. Now, you get a couple of those, that's all you needed. Just, you know, that's all you needed to get yourself together. That was my ADHD medicine, because I, you know, she wasn't coming to school. She didn't get to school like this. But I know things after Home Alone, and after, you know, that came out, a lot of things have changed legally. So I don't know if it's for the better or for the worse. Yeah. Society looks like it is what it is today. There's always, people always make claims on theories on one side or the other. But all I know is we're living in an environment now where parenting is still so important. And you've got to find a way to get to your child and to make sure you help your child get what that child needs. Because if they miss
their opportunity
to be able to get their education, you know, as they get older, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to get it.
It is. It is. You just have to help. Some kids can't find success on their own. So you have to help them be successful.
And all kids want to be successful.
All kids.
They all want help.
Yeah.
Some parents don't give it to them, but they all want help.
They all want it. They all want it. They look for it. You know, and so it's very important that, you know, that we as parents try to help our kids the best we can, our grandkids or the school kids that we work with. You know, and when you see that a child needs help, even though they're not my child, you know, and I'm not being paid to do that, but I help the kids if they need it. You know, you see a kid that's looking like he's lost, and so your job is to help them. And I do that with all of my kids. I always tell them, if you ever need someone to talk to, just come back. And the kids, my room after school at JCA is the room where all the kids come to. Kids come to my room after school for one reason or another, to write on my chalkboard, to get a piece of candy, to say goodnight to me. You know, I have kids that come every day to my room. So,
well, you know, they must be doing something right. They know where care is at. And they're going to come where they can find some love and some care, you know. And thank God for the support of the two of you and the years that you've done this. You know, the training the mama left us here with is invaluable, you know. When I left the morning in 85, trying to come here in 86, not knowing what I was going to do, didn't know I was going to make it. But I was able to make it because I was able to cling to the training that I was given and that I was geared to, and you know, and I'm learning more and more about the decision my mother made to give, to, you know, in order for my for mama to have me, and it's just amazing the life that we live, you know. I can't thank you guys enough for being surrogate mothers for me, especially with. when I know what I'm doing and when I don't know what I'm doing, you know, you've always have been constant. You've always been there, and you are my sisters, and I'm just blessed by that. We got 9 more minutes left. So Tyra, I want to give you an opportunity for some final words if you have anything.
Not much. Just appreciate being here. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Well, Lois Phillips, when we first started talking about it, you said, well, we ain't got much to talk about, but we have talked for 3 hours.
Yeah, we did say that.
That's it? Yeah. Well, remind y'all that. We ain't going to have much to talk about, Mike. Okay. No, but we talked for 3 hours, and I just thank you because you guys really have covered
the spectrum
of all.
Well, thank you.
Wow. You know, your experience, I mean, I know you just go through the motion. Lois says, I don't even think about this no more because it's just what I do. It's just who you are, you know, and that's why after retiring and you're sitting around, you know, no, I got to go back and be, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is where I add value at.
This is
my calling. This is my passion. I agree with Marie in regards, you can hear the passion. You can hear the love even in talking about it.
these number of years later and still speaking about these stories of things that happened and the intrinsic value of things that you have gathered and that you grab. Those are the rewards. Those are the things that are hanging. And, you know, even though we may not get, ribbons and rewards down here, there is a all-seeing eye recording everything that's going on. And, you are being rewarded for that further on up the road when the Lord calls us in. So I'm just indebted to you. Just thankful to be your brother, and it was really warm to hear Jimmy and to hear Michelle in their advanced ages. I remember both of them. right? And to hear them speak the way they speak about you guys is invaluable. It's one thing to have a child and to raise other folks' children, but it's another thing, the view of your child having for you, that really speaks volumes. And you guys have been. And I thought I heard, did I hear Rusty in there barking?
Yes, he was in there.
He had to get his two cents. Yes. I ain't your Rusty Barkley. I know.
Yep, that was him.
But brother said that was his other brother. So, you know.
Yep. His other brother's sleeping now.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, you guys have a great day. Thank you for that. Let me just, one last thing. We got a couple minutes left. Make sure that I ain't overlooking nobody at this point in time. Is there anyone that may have a last comment or anything that they would like to add at this point in time?
Michael?
Yes, Mother.
I wanted to point out, Sister and them, were, I think Phyllis was the one that said that it was her calling. Maybe both sisters. But if we, the scripture that we have been studying here in Golgotha, it's the fivefold, one of those fivefold is teacher. And we always look at it as a teacher of the word of God, but God is concerned with the holistic part of man.
Yes.
And so so this is a calling of God. And a lot of times that's why everybody can't do it. And a lot of people go to school and get the education, but they can't carry it out because they don't have the temperament. But God has blessed Lois and Phyllis, and they are able to do that. And if you go over there to Ephesians 6, sisters, and 6 and 10, and come down, you'll see teacher. That's you.
Okay.
In the fivefold ministry. In the five, I always go back to the word. Y'all know me. I'm a preacher. I can't help it. But that when apostles, pastors, teachers, that's you. And that's because you ain't standing behind a pulpit, beating the pulpit down. Don't have nothing to do with it. You still have a calling of God that he has established you with, and you have carried it out, amen, to an excellent level. And so we're proud to be associated with you all as family and as friends and as loved ones. As many people as I have said and taken care of in this city, you have done just as much on the educational level as I have on the secular level. I really believe that. And I know I done said thousands of people move. But I believe you all have done just the same in the educational level. And our family is something about us. Something about the Lord. We have a lot of trauma. We have a lot of trauma, ain't no doubt. But we also have a lot of greatness in our family. And God, if you look everywhere we go, there's greatness in our family. And so it's just a blessing to be a part of this Thomas Peavy family because there are traumas, but there are also some really wonderful things. And I will always be indebted to your mother, because if she hadn't been for her, I don't know where Michael would have been. Well, me and Michael both would have been under a bridge somewhere because I wasn't getting
there.
Probably so. And that was the best thing that ever happened, because God raised him up to be the man he is today. I don't try to take that credit. I just thank God that she was there to help me. That ain't that I still make green beans, fried potatoes, and neck bones. I still know how to make turkey. I still know how to make the bread. So it wasn't just Michael. She helped me out. And I'm just grateful for her. And I'm grateful to you. I was raised away from the family. I didn't really know what it was to have sisters. I love y'all. And thank y'all for being who you are. Let's put it that way. Thank you for being
here. Okay. All right.
God bless.
God bless. God bless. And Jimmy, just so you know, me and Lois and I were right there by Mom when we both learned how to cook, and but one of us went another direction sometimes. So.
All right, okay. All righty. I'll be in touch.
All right. Talk to you soon. Well, Lothar, thank you again, and we just appreciate you. Any other last comments? We got 2 minutes.
Nope.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the information you shared with us today. It's vital, and it's very important. We've covered teachers, we've covered perspective, we've covered technique. Man, you covered so much in the array of years of experience, and so it's invaluable. And I'll make sure that you guys get a copy of this so that you can share it or listen back to it to hear yourself on the radio. But
thank you.
And I love you much. And I will see. I will be there in August. We'll be there in August.
Okay.
That time is coming very fast. All right. Thank you so very much. And I want to thank everyone that's called in today and has listened in today. And that this has been a wonderful day, a really great tribute day for myself, just to be able to interview my sisters, the ones I grew up with, and to see, Mama's passed on. She was born in 1913, January 18th, 1913. And, man, she'd be 100-something years old now. But thankful that her legacy still goes on based on what she's done. And our family, I agree with my mother, is that our family has roots in so many different areas that have spewed up and has helped thousands and thousands of people. So we're just thankful to God for allowing us to exist and allowing us to be, and that we're still able to be utilized for his purpose here on this earth. You guys have a great day. God bless you in the name of the Lord. And we will talk with you next week for Praise God. Let's Talk About a Radio Show at next Saturday at 10 a.m.